email latedebate@rte.ie.
Hello again, still with us here in studio, Paula Butterley, Fine Gael TD for Louth, Rory O'Murachu, Sinn Féin TD for Louth, Jed Nash, Labour TD for Louth, and Saoirse McGarrigle, freelance journalist whose work on Michael Shine, the paedophile, has been published extensively in the journal. Saoirse, we're going to get you to just outline for us, first of all, who was Michael Shine, when did his abuse come to light, and where are we now?
Okay, so for anyone who isn't familiar, Michael Shine was born in Tipperary, 1931. He went on to study medicine in UCD. And then by 1964, he took a role as a registrar at Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital in Drogheda in Louth. By 1968, he'd actually progressed and become a consultant. And by all accounts, he had an incredibly successful medical career. Simultaneously, while he worked at the hospital, he also ran what was known locally as his private rooms on Fair Street, which is one of the main arteries through Drogheda town. He was revered and he was held in very high regard by all within the medical profession and wider community. However, in 1995, a whistleblower nurse actually spoke out about allegations of child sexual abuse. And within a year, he had retired on a full pension and was charged with indecent assault in 1996. However, it took a very long period of time for that case to actually go to trial. It was 2003 before that trial went ahead, and it was in Dundalk Court. He was actually found not guilty. However, that wouldn't be the last time he would be in a courtroom. In 2017, he was in court yet again. He was convicted on 3 counts of indecent assault. However, he was released on bail pending appeal. 2 years later, he's back in court. This time, he's convicted of the indecent and sexual assault of 7 boys, ranging from the 1970s up until the early 1990s. And at that point, that culminated a legal saga that had spanned almost 25 years at that point. He did go to prison. He was sentenced to 4 years and he spent 3 years in the Midlands prison. So in 2022, he was released. And since then, he has lived in Dublin 4 and kept a low profile.
Right. He made, throughout this time, extensive use of the legal system to try and challenge his convictions, to try and push back trial dates and to question the fairness of holding him to account at all. It should be noted, he has never admitted his guilt for any of these offences.
No, and I guess the current nature of the story where we're at this week is the push for a public inquiry. And the victims who are voicing this campaign, they feel that's at the very heart of the problem, because for many people who have made reports to the Gardaí, there are hundreds of people who've come forward who have both settled civil claims with the medical missionaries in Mary who operated the hospital. Currently, 360 people have come forward, spoken about their abuse, and are now receiving support from a local advocacy organisation, Dignity for Patients. So the number of men involved who have come and spoken about their experiences does not mirror the number of cases we've seen go through the criminal courts. Hence, how many of the men that I've interviewed and spoke with have spoken about how a public inquiry would be for them, like, to quote, some kind of justice is how they describe it, because they feel that they have been failed, is how they described it, by the criminal justice system. And essentially, a court of appeal ruling described Shine as being in what they decided, it described as a wholly unique scenario, that it was beyond realistic that he could ever stand trial again due to a misstep, is how they described it, by the DPP.
This and was also an issue that arose in 2017 when charges were being preferred against him. His solicitor wasn't told until 2019 that those charges in relation to a particular allegation had been preferred against him. Is that right?
It's since the 2019 conviction, there has been an issue with going forward with other reports that have been sent to the DPP. And this stems back to a successful appeal he had in the Court of Appeal, where the court rules that the appellant was not fit to stand trial. And partly this was attributed to the misstep by the DPP that you reference.
All right. You've spoken to many of the victims of Michael Shine. We'll hear from one of them, Gerard Murray. He spoke to you. Can you give us just an idea of why Gerard spoke to you and what he wants before we hear him?
Yeah, Gerard is a very driven, emotional person. He sees this campaign as using his voice to speak about his case in the hope that others will find comfort, that they're not alone. He's very frank about his own experience. He was abused by Shine when he was just 4 years of age. Later, he was abused by a Christian brother in school when he was just 14. And that led him down a path of drink, drugs. He experienced homelessness. Now, 25 years later, he, as he would say, I'm clean and I'm sober.
Sure. And it's not an uncommon experience for people who have suffered early childhood trauma that, you know, addiction is a route people find their way into as a result of those early childhood experiences.
And I think he's very frank about that, which, but I would also, I think it's very, very appropriate to talk about redress. I think that the public see it as an unsavoury, you know, element to it, that justice should be seen as separate to the civil claims.
All right, well, just pause that. Let's hear from Gerard first, and we'll return to that point. This is Gerard Murray speaking to Saoirse.
4 years of age, and I was abused by Michael Shine. Yeah. Even though one side of me thought was like a medical exam, the other side of me knew something was wrong. It was something very wrong. But the people know then he was abusing kids. Like, and did nothing, said nothing. They're complicit, those people. And to this day, if they didn't speak up, they're complicit. The medical missionaries, the Catholic Church, the Irish state, all are complicit. And to this day, I and hundreds of us have not got justice. Again, my case has been thrown out because of a mistake the DPP did in a previous case. You know, like, it has no relevance to my case whatsoever, but yet it's been, the law says that going forward, this man can't be prosecuted. It's disgusting, absolutely disgusting, that somebody who's abused hundreds of young men has only spent 2.5 years, who got out for good behaviour, who's never admitted his guilt. I carry a ball of anger, I carry a ball of depression, I carry a ball of sadness, and that's inside me all the time. Every single day I wake up, every single day, and the abuse hasn't gone away. It doesn't go away. An open public commission inquiry is the only way I think I'll ever get justice. It's the only way. There's too many secrets being buried. There's too many secrets being blocked. There's too many secrets being hidden. Yeah, people have questions to answer. Do you know, they can't hide forever. So, because my abuse by Michael Shine is with me every single day. It affects who I am to this day. It's made me who I am to this day. He should never, ever been released from prison. He should have spent the rest of his life in prison.
And that was Gerard Murray speaking to Saoirse for her work on the journal. If you have been affected by anything that was raised there in Gerard's interview, you can go to rte.ie/helplines to see organisations who might be able to help you if you do need that help. Saoirse, before we went in to listen to that powerful interview with Gerard, you were talking about the issue of redress, and we heard his call for a public inquiry there and a call for justice.
Yes. In relation to that, I think we have to discuss the medical missionaries of Mary. When the hospital was established and it was run by the medical missionaries of Mary in 1997, when they were selling the hospital to the Department of Health, there was an agreement made. It was actually signed the day before the transfer of the hospital over to the state, and this indemnity agreement would suggest that there was certainly an awareness of abuse happening in the hospital. It indemnified the state against claims in relation to allegations of sexual abuse in the event that the insurers wouldn't pay out on those claims. However, since then, in relation to more than 200 civil cases, have been paid out by the insurers. So that fund, which was valued at £1.4 million Irish pounds at the time, still held in trust. Now, I've tried repeatedly to get the Department of Health to confirm the current balance because it was an interest accruing account. And with inflation and the transfer from old Irish pounds to euro, it's worth considerably more. But the significance of this fund right now is that there are ongoing efforts by the nuns, the medical missionaries of Mary, to withdraw the funds. And this is happening at the very same time that men like Gerard are taking their own civil claims against the medical missionaries of Mary. However, there's all indications that the congregation are defending these claims robustly. In the event that they are successful in withdrawing that fund, it leaves no buffer to cover the redress that will be required. And it essentially makes it a far more adversarial process for men like Gerard. And I really, interviewing these men, and it comes across quite clearly, like you said, the ramifications of the abuse impacts their life, not just on an emotional, but on a practical way. These men, some of them had affected their education, decisions they went on to make. I think that we need to look at redress, yeah. And a commission of inquiry is, as Gerard says himself, is his only way to get some sort of justice and transparency. What happened? Why was it allowed to happen? And why did it go on for so long? And just on that, most recently, a victim I interviewed at the weekend, he was 75 years of age. And in 1964, he was abused by Shine. And we estimate that Shine was working in the hospital approximately 3 or 4 months at that time. So if it had been stopped at that point, you're talking about three decades that could have been prevented. So there are questions that victims have, and they want them to be answered. And I understand they're very, very disappointed at the comments made by the Taoiseach yesterday, because while the debate...
This was in relation to calls for a public inquiry with regard to Children's Health Ireland, where Micheál Martin was questioning whether or not ultimately public inquiries brought about the outcomes that people were seeking when they called for them.
Yes, and I think they were left scratching their heads wondering, is he speaking generally around about the model of a commission of investigation, or was he speaking more specifically in relation to that case? But I think he made points in relation to the cost and the ongoing delays that these public inquiries can lead to. However, the points that have been made in terms of the money that they take, and he referred to, you know, ongoing long tribunals that have gone for a long period of time. If you look at the 1990s, you know, when this all began, we had, as they said, inquiries are part and parcel of everyday life. By 2003, €100 million had been spent on tribunals. So at that point, the Commission for Law Reform decide they need to find a quicker, a cheaper, essentially, way to deliver justice. And at that point, we have the 2004 Commission of Investigation Act, which the government then adopt and believe that's the speedier way to resolve issues like this. So the comments yesterday fly in the face of what victims heard when the scoping inquiry report came out just a few months ago, because Mary O'Toole welcomes that model.
It should be said as well that on those tribunals in the 1990s, when there was the outlay costs, but there was also considerable sums of money recouped via the revenue commissioners arising from the revelations of those tribunals, that meant they ultimately washed their faces. Look, all of the TDs we have on our panel tonight are TDs for Louth. So let's go to them now. Paula Butterley, the Dignity for Patients group have made a call for a public inquiry. It's clear that Michael Shine has only served sentences for a sample of those allegations that have been made against him. The money will never compensate people for the harm that's been done. So it's an issue arguably beyond money. So on that basis, would you back the call for a public inquiry?
I think the most important figure here at the moment is 360. That's 360 men that were sexually abused by or assaulted by Michael Shine. He was a man in a position of power. He was a man that abused that position in order to inflict untold abuse, suffering, to those men who were boys, children at the time. And as one of them pointed out to me, that child is still in there somewhere. You know, we also have to reflect on their families, their friends, the wider community and the damage that has been done. There is no doubt that Michael Shine has cast a shadow across Drogheda, but also across the whole county of Louth, because these victims, you know, are not just from Drogheda, they're from Dundalk, they're from all across the county. So in terms of supporting a commission of investigation, if you sit there for any length of time and speak to any of those victims, you know that what they are looking for is, where possible, to get a full picture of what happened. So it's quite impossible not to have sympathy and not to back them in their quest for a commission of investigation. And I have supported it. Yeah,
yes,
I did.
Okay.
I said it quite clearly that I would. You know, it is a decision that will have to go to Cabinet and it'll be for the government to decide. But quite frankly, they have suffered an undescribable toll over the last 40, 50, 60 years.
Okay. Jed Nash.
I've been associated with this issue and campaign, if I can describe it as such, for a very long time for a number of different reasons, principally because many of those who Michael Shine abused are friends of mine. I was born in the mid-1970s. Most of the victims and survivors were born in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s. The veritable dogs in the street in Drogheda knew about Michael Shine's predatory paedophile behaviour. The question shouldn't be whether we should have a commission of inquiry into Michael Shine's activities and the circumstances that allowed him to act with relative impunity in the health service at the time, but why shouldn't we have it? Victims and survivors are asking very legitimate questions about why, for example, after the obviously the Mary O'Toole scoping inquiry into abuse in religious-run schools and the commitment on a commission of inquiry in that regard, we have had the Bill Keneally inquiry, and the work around that is something that Saoirse and her campaign in journalism is very much associated with as well. So the question is why, and there's no hierarchy of victims here, I want to say that very, very clearly, why on the one hand will government grant inquiries into certain circumstances and not others? We could have a very discreet commission of inquiry involving the conduct and behaviour of one man who is employed by one religious order, whose wages were being paid by the forerunner of the HSE, the Northeastern Health Board. There are questions as well around how the system has responded more generally over decades. The missteps, as they were described by Saoirse from the DPP, for example. Issues were raised with me as recently as this week by a survivor of Michael Shine's predatory behaviour, a man who was treated by him, who made complaints to certain members of an Garda Síochána, and those complaints never made it beyond a member of an Garda Síochána's desk. So the only way we can... By the way, when somebody goes to jail, that does not constitute justice. What constitutes justice is a holistic assessment of why this happened, how it happened, who allowed it to happen. I'm very taken by the comments made by Gerard. I know Gerard well, that those who didn't stand up and say stop are complicit. There was knowledge of this behaviour. Nobody can plead ignorance in my community. It was well known. I give an example. It was literally on the eve of the 1991 under-16 Louth GAA Championship final. I was playing in it. I broke my thumb. I had to go to hospital to get it checked out. I was examined by Michael Shine. And of course my friends would say, oh, you're off to see Michael Shine. Good luck with that. That was the response and that was the reaction generally in the Drogheda area, in the Louth area, if you are actually being treated by this doctor. The medical missionaries of Mary themselves effectively acknowledged that there were a slew of cases anticipated in the context of the transfer of the hospital to the Northeastern Health Board, to the Northeastern Health Board, because of the indemnity agreement that was required as a condition of that sale, the transfer of the hospital to the state. The T.C. Smith review is important here as well. The only thing that Victims and Survivors and the Dignity for Patients group and asked the previous administration just to do to support, and this is a review carried out for context, by a retired senior judge into whether or not a commission of investigation ought to be sanctioned into Michael Shine and his behaviour and related matters. And he decided, and of course we've only seen a redacted version of essentially what his recommendations were, that because there were ongoing criminal and civil cases, that was not the way to proceed. Now, there's plenty of case law now and jurisprudence around the fact that you can actually run a commission of investigation while in parallel have simultaneous potentially, you know, criminal cases and civil cases, even though the prospect of criminal cases now, given the Court of Appeal position, may very well be remote. So this I asked this, look, last September, government had said, we want to get an assessment from the Attorney General, their legal advice as to whether or not we should publish the full T.C. Smith review. That dates back to 2009-2010. 8 months later, the Minister of Health replied to me in a written reply to a Dáil parliamentary question last week, we still have not received the advice.
Okay.
Now, how is that a measure of good faith to victims and survivors in advance of a heavily anticipated meeting with the Taoiseach that's going to take place very, very shortly? That's a problem for me.
Okay. Rory O'Murachu.
Well, look, it's incredibly difficult to have to deal and listen to these interviews from people who have been not only suffered unspeakable, but then had no possibility. Justice was withdrawn them for many years. And in fairness, we look at Michael Shine, who was able to operate as almost a godlike consultant from the 1960s, operating right through the 70s, 80s, 90s. And for an awful lot of people, it's terrible luck that you were in a particular situation where a predator like him was able to operate, but a huge amount of people know he was given the protection like nobody else. You know, for all the issues we have throughout Irish society, there was a protection here that should not have been, that should not have happened. And the only reason you can think it could happen is because he was a consultant and he was given this elite status and he could not be questioned and nothing could be done. And you have failure from the state in relation to whether we're talking about the guards, whether we're talking about the DPP, whether we're obviously talking about the hospital, and we're talking about, and we're still talking about a Taoiseach. And look, I recall this being brought up as an issue by Arthur Morgan. So we went through Arthur Morgan.
Your predecessor
exactly,
in the role as
Imelda Munster. And it's right round to myself and to Joanna Byrne, who invited Dignity for Patients in and asked these questions. And Micheál Martin isn't just a commentator who will say, commissions of investigation and inquiries that we've had over the years are very expensive. The government have a certain set of power and control in relation to how this commission of investigation is set up. But if Micheál Martin has another alternative on how this can be done and can be done adequately from the point of view of the families, well, he better be bringing that to the meeting, because I think what we've heard so far and also what we've heard in relation to the questions that are legitimately being asked about CHI and others is that we need to find another way. Well, he's not a commentator. He is the guy who's at the helm, who has responsibility, and there has been abject failure by government to deal with this.
Okay, I do want to, you know, because the issue of money and recompense and these things come up. There was a report done by the ESRI, written by Professor Alan Barrett, a number of years ago. 17% of child sexual abuse survivors were out of the labour force as a result of being sick or permanently disabled. And in terms of household income, households in which there was a survivor of child sexual abuse living, income was 34% lower. So there's a massive lifelong economic cost, apart from the emotional damage that's done to people as a result of child sexual abuse. Saoirse, can we just go back to the issue of the medical missionaries of Mary and this fund and your efforts, I suppose, to try and get some insight into the toing and froing between the Department of Health and the Order about how this money should be treated?
Well, the agreement is very clear. There's a purpose for this fund. It cannot be used for anything other than that stated purpose, which is to indemnify the state in the event that the insurers don't pay out. However, it's the ambiguity and all the questions that the public have around it. The only people who know the value of that fund right now is the Medical Missionaries of Mary and the state. The issue at the moment is that there's an independent expert currently conducting a review to make a determination on whether the congregation should be given permission to withdraw these funds. However,
do you know by any chance who appointed the expert and why that's even being questioned?
I have been unable to get any more details in terms of who the independent expert is, when we can expect a decision to be made on this. But can I, sorry, Jed, just before that, when you discussed there the ESRI and the impact on finances in the home, there's one anecdote I want to bring into this. Something that the executive of patients have seen is that medical issues, dental issues, they are a concern for the clients that they work with. But you have to remember, when the abuse has happened in a medical setting, there's a reluctance on the part of many of these victims to actually return to a healthcare facility. So to give you one example, Peter O'Connor, gifted musician, I interviewed him in relation to this. He was a victim in the Troubles. He was injured. He suffered more than 94% burns to his body during an explosion during the Troubles. He physically ran away from hospital to get away from Shine. And that man refused plastic surgery treatment and presumably the trauma counselling he would have needed. So if you look at, that's one instance of someone who didn't, you know, get the required medical treatment they needed in a very extreme scenario. Another man made a point to me, Ian Armstrong. He's advocated all along for discretionary medical cards as a very, very small gesture from the state, which doesn't need an independent expert. You know, this is something that I would imagine all politicians could advocate for, a very, very small token measure that would ensure those men who, as you point out, have in some cases financially suffered as a result of...
Yeah, they're three times more likely to be sick or disabled compared to other men, even accounting for psychological difficulties. And, you know, that's just in the case of men. What were the grounds of refusal where you sought correspondence between the department and the Medical Missionaries of Mary? Frequently, you know, if something comes under the heading of legal advice, journalists will be refused access to it, or if it's an ongoing process of deliberation. I mean, there are multiple grounds why your freedom of information request can end up in the dustbin, but what grounds did you get?
In this issue, there were 63 records of correspondence. They were all redacted, with the exception of my own emails, which were press queries. So the only files I was able to actually see in terms of correspondence between the Department of Health, the Minister for Health, in relation to this topic, was in fact my own press queries. However, in the schedule of records that they had refused to offer to show me, it listed correspondence with a leading private law company who they have now retained to act on behalf of the Department of Health and the HSE in relation to this. So by deduction, we could work out that actually there is a private law company acting on behalf of the state to engage with the independent expert who is now going to make a determination on whether that money can be withdrawn by the Medical Missionary Marys or not.
Okay, but Colm, it's even worse than this, and the obfuscation is becoming more concerning, even from the Department of Health.
Do you, by the way, Jed Nash, have any insight into why anyone was appointed to see whether money could be withdrawn from this fund?
My recollection from looking at it years ago was that this was a function of the fund originally and the arrangement that would be periodically assessed, even though it may appear to be unusual. Just 2 weeks ago, I submitted some parliamentary questions to the Minister for Health to obtain a status update on the review of the indemnity fund and the ongoing assessment of it. And I had to take up the response with the Ciarán Cóirle, something I rarely do. Because the minister failed to answer the question, in fact referred the matter to the HSE. It's actually properly a matter for the Department of Health to engage upon. It's under the aegis of the minister. It's a policy matter for the Department of Health. And I'll tell you why. Because 2 years ago, and indeed last year as well, I raised the very same questions on the floor of the Dáil, orally, to the then minister. And indeed, I remember on one occasion as well, under in another format, to actually the then finance minister, Michael McGrath, to ask about this particular phone. And the Department for Health and the Minister for Health was very happy to engage and to answer those questions. So that's just an insight, I think, into the ongoing obfuscation and the frustration that people are experiencing with the Department of Health and the system more generally.
There are a number of questions there, Paula Butterley. The Taoiseach is going to be meeting victims next Wednesday. It would be reasonable for those victims to expect answers to a number of those questions. The questions being, will there be a public inquiry? Why is this process going on with the fund? And what attitude the government will take towards this in terms of financing any compensation or recompense to victims?
Well, first, I'm not going to speak on behalf of the Taoiseach in regards to what will be brought up with the meeting. I would hope that there'll be an open and frank conversation and that the victims will be able to express exactly what they would like to come from this commission of investigation. My understanding is that this review is still ongoing, and as a result, I'm not in a position to comment on it. However, I would say that perhaps it is a moment that perhaps the medical missionaries pause and reflect a moment as to, you know, their actions and the fact that they're pursuing this so actively at the moment, and really just pause there for a moment and see, is that in the best interests of the victims?
We'll have a function over the medical mission. Maybe we'll have a function over how the executive operates and who is accountable to the Dáil. And the Minister for Health, for example, my basic question about the status update.
Okay, Rory, I do want to go to Rory Murcho, because you made a point there, and you've all made it, and I want to go to you all on this, is that the level of knowledge of people within the area and people close to Michael Shine, there are questions about how much people knew. But in terms of public representatives pursuing this, I mean, have you ever experienced any pushback as a result of being vocal on this? Have you ever got an attitude of people saying, look, it's a long time ago, let sleeping dogs lie?
I haven't, and Imelda Munster, obviously being from Drogheda, would have been a lot more vociferous than I would have been in relation to this. And I would say she wouldn't have. But again, anybody that looks at the timeline in relation to this sees nothing but abject failure. So if I'm not going to speak for the survivors, but it'd be very difficult to not have some element of seeing it through a lens of a conspiracy at this point in time. So we are where we are. The Taoiseach has the ability to bring this to a conclusion and at least to give some pathway to these survivors from a point of view of what is very, very late in terms of justice. Right. Because, as I say, abject failure and utterly disgraceful.
Sorry, Sergio, you wanted to come in there again.
Yeah, there's just the term victim-centred has been bandied about so much by politicians of the last 6 months. And I think that on Tuesday, when the victims go to meet the Taoiseach, they're very, very keen and clear. They want to make it clear that they don't want just a public of inquiry, that politicians decide what they will and won't deal with. The terms of reference will have to be very, very specific and ensure it is victim-centred. And going beyond that, victim-centred can't just be about what they decide to include in the modules and what they decide not to. It has to be down to everything, you know, adequate support for these people, you know, testimonial aids. Philomena Lee was in the High Court just within 24 hours of the publication of the Mother and Baby Home report because her testimony wasn't accurately represented, and then the recordings were lost. So there are so many lessons that have to be learned from previous inquiries that the conversation on Tuesday shouldn't be just about whether there can be a commission investigation.
It has to be about what kind, you know, because there's expectations, but there's expectations have been raised and the men have been disappointed far too often.
Okay. The clock is slightly against us. We do have to take a break. We'll be back in a minute.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.